Welcome to High Techies Podcast. I'm your host, Pramod Thakal. In the High Techies Podcast, we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and leaders who are trying to solve the worldly problems. We talk on various topics from starting a business to finding funds to hiring and managing people. But most importantly, we talk about the actual problems they are trying to solve. Now, on this episode of High Techies Podcast, I have with me Francisca Iselli. Francisca is a best-selling author and a co-founder of the marketing education platform Basic Bananas, based in Sydney, Australia. She is joined by her business partner, Tom, from Data People. Welcome, guys.
All right. Let's get started. Maybe explain me, your journey together, perhaps. There must be a starting point in your career where you said, okay, this is something that I want to do for the rest of my life, and this is going to be my journey, starting Basic Bananas or whatever it is, as far as the journey is concerned. So how did you even get started with this journey?
Yeah, so I might get started real quick. So we both come actually from a different background. So it's an interesting journey. I came from and still come from marketing and advertising. And I've got a company called Basic Bananas, where we specialize in marketing education. And one of the things that we obviously see a lot in this business is that data is really important when it comes to being effective with your marketing campaigns. And then I met Tom, and maybe you share what your company has been doing for 20 or so
years. Yeah, so for the last almost 20 years, I've run multiple recruitment and talent businesses. And those businesses have always focused on data and analytics. The idea of setting up more of a data consulting business for me has always been, it's an idea I've had for a long, long time. But I think it was about sort of, in order to realize that I had to bring the right people together in terms of the right skill sets. One of those skill sets being, really, really strong marketing people.
The
best marketing people, which is where obviously Francisca came in. So it was, it's still quite a new business to Data People. But having owned a business previously, and also Francisca owning businesses previously, and having that ability to set up companies successfully and build the right culture, we both felt that it was a good time and good skill sets to bring together to form the organization. And that was kind of late last year.
Yeah, and we partnered. So Tom and I partnered with two other guys. One is our tech guy, our tech nerd, and then one is our ops guy. And there's four of us, four founders. And that's how we started the Data People. Both of us have been running our own show for the last, I think, similar time, right? 15, 16 years, maybe?
Yeah. About 17 years for me now.
You're a little bit, You're a bit older, I guess.
I'm glad the video's off. Let's put it that way.
You're lucky today. Usually I do videos as well, but I'm having some trouble for the past couple of sessions. So that's about the start. But then, what is so sexy about being an entrepreneur?
There's not one sexy thing, right? There's multiple sexy things about being an entrepreneur. The first thing I'd say is there is probably the outside opinion of being an entrepreneur is that it's all roses all the time. And I should probably start with that and say that it isn't necessarily always roses. It takes a lot of hard work, it takes a lot of commitment. I think it really takes a lot of passion as well in terms of the work that you do, the product that you sell, or the business that you're in. But for me, the benefits, the first thing for me is flexibility. I've got a couple of young children. It offers me that lifestyle to be able to work when I want. The other one for me, which is really sexy, is the people that you work with and the people that you can bring into an organization or partner with. I think another one is probably just in like exposure to different people, to other entrepreneurs, and to other ways of thinking about solving problems. And I think that being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, being able to do things a bit differently, be creative, and also make mistakes, and sort of accepting those mistakes as part of the process. So that's some of the stuff that I'd certainly say is kind of sexy.
Yeah, and for me, it's definitely also freedom. So that's the, you know, one that you mentioned too. So freedom is probably one of the most important points about being an entrepreneur. I would also say leadership. So being able to see people grow, as you know, as you build your team and just seeing people grow as a person and giving opportunities. Also, the third one for me is a big one, probably one of the biggest ones, which is impact. Impact for me is really important. So being able to create impact through entrepreneurship, I think, is super duper important. And also probably the fourth one would be to be able to innovate in a space that maybe is ripe for innovation.
Is it something more to do with the freedom, I would say, you know, than to create an opportunity for people where the, you know, the service or, I don't know, the product offering isn't there, or to say, hey, you know, I'm going to create this particular business, mean that, you know, you know there would be a different vertical of job offering. For example, just to give you an example, let's say 5 to 10 years ago, there was no data scientist, right? Just to give you a perspective. Mm-hmm. It's a new role on its own. And somebody, you know, told me that, you know, when we started to look for someone with this particular skill set, we couldn't find anyone. So we had to sort of, you know, put together a job description that would suit closer to being a data scientist. So what I'm trying to ask is, like, do you get excited about creating that kind of new sector on its own?
You probably do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite relevant, the whole data science topic, because that's an area that I've been involved in for many, many years. I think what you've got to be conscious of with these sorts of things is the hype as well that can be associated around that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's you know, creating something new is a challenge. It's difficult to come up with something new, I think. Often these things just kind of fall in your lap. You know, going back to data again, the emergence of big data has meant that organizations and companies and people are having to manage bigger loads of data. They're doing that through new technology. They're doing that through new ways of thinking. And that's something that, you know, interestingly enough, the data people are very much involved in. So I think for us, that's something that really excites us. And I think the other thing about, you know, you almost sort of carve out your own verticals within verticals a lot of the time. You know, again, going back to the data sort of vertical, it's so broad and wide that there are so many things you can pick within that broad vertical and become a real expert and specialist at it. And that's where I think when you become that expert, that's when you really make an impact. And I think that's also where people kind of trust the work you do and really see you as consultants and contributors. Yeah, have you got anything else you'd
add on? Yeah, for me, in terms of innovation, you know, your question, no, let's bring it, you know, just to the topic of innovation, which is one of the reasons why I love running my own businesses. I see it as not necessarily coming up with a whole new thing like Tom mentioned, but doing things better and doing things differently to what other people are doing. So in the marketing space, we work with a lot of small businesses at Basic Bananas, and it's just about having the courage to run completely different campaigns, something that maybe other businesses wouldn't dare to do. A lot of industries are quite boring because they copy each other. So how can a business, a small business, go into this space and say, you know what, I'm going to take an idea from a different industry and apply it in my business and do things differently?
That is an interesting approach, you know, to make something better. However, you know, how often do you fall into the trap of doing something even worse? You know, from your experience, how often have you been into that trap?
That's a good question. So how often do we make things worse? Now we have to be real honest here.
I think that's part of growth, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
You know, you have to fail to grow, and that's what being an entrepreneur is all about, I think.
I guess, yeah, because I guess you don't consciously make something worse, but we definitely, I would say some of the maybe campaigns that we have done that we thought are better ended up being worse. But it wasn't conscious. It was just, oh, the market didn't respond so well to this particular campaign. So I don't actually know how often that happens, but I'm definitely not opposed to it happening if it's unconscious.
No, the thing is, I asked this question to a couple of entrepreneurs. Like, for example, if you have an idea and you work on that idea, and you know, maybe your friends and family, you know, thought that was a great idea, but then when you go into the market, that's when the reality hits and you are like, okay, this was a crap idea, right? So that's where that's where the question is coming from, you know, just to know, like, you know, how often do you guys run into that kind of situation where you felt, okay, this is crap, you know? So
yeah. I mean, I would say for us working with small businesses, we do sometimes see crap ideas. If usually they happen when somebody is actually extra courageous and they have this brilliant idea that maybe not many people have had before, and then it turns out that it won't work. This is going to sound a bit boring, but I actually find that when you go into a space like the data people in the data analytics space, basic knowledge marketing, we have another agency that is in the branding space. When you go into a space that you know is something that you can make work, you almost can't fail unless you don't know how to run a business. But if you go into it's sort of the Richard Branson approach. He only goes into a space, usually other than his moon missions at the moment with Virgin Galactic, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Virgin Galactic, yeah. He only goes into spaces that he knows you can succeed in. So he's not really somebody who will go and invent a whole new thing. He will go into a space where people are not doing an amazing job and he will do it better. And that's how I look a little bit at how I like to build my own businesses. And then of course we both, you know, Tom and I also invest in companies that are the ones that will be more courageous to invent something completely new that may or may not work.
You know, when you look at the marketing space, you know, compared to 10 years ago, you know, 20 years ago, like, you know, of course, there's a, you know, rise of social media and, you know, you have other digital platforms now, which supports the different campaigns online. How do you compare this space, you know, compared to, I don't know, 10 years ago, you know, given the rise of social media and so forth?
You know, the coolest thing about what's happened in the last 10 years is that I feel like with the emergence of social media and more digital platforms, it's really leveled the playing field. I remember when I was in advertising, I used to work in advertising, and it was a lot about who has the most money will be able to do the best marketing and will have the biggest reach in terms of who they can attract. And now, because there wasn't social media back then, or it was just really just quite new. And now because of social media and having so many other platforms other than above the line marketing, small businesses that have small budgets can definitely make a big splash, which I think is the coolest thing that's happened in the last 10 years in terms of giving opportunity to the small guys that maybe don't have as much cash as the big guys.
What are some of the challenges? Like, you know, you mentioned about the equal playing field, but at the same time, you know, this particular space, you know, is so challenging and so complex on its own, because you have to first of all understand your audience, and based on around the audience, you test and try different campaigns perhaps. At the same time, you have a bigger competitors who perhaps do not have accountability as far as the spending is concerned. How do you compete with that particular space?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that's actually also where data comes in quite a lot, is just really looking, and maybe Tom can add here too, is really just looking at what can you find out on a small budget. So almost being like investigators in terms of really understanding your audience in terms of how they react to different campaigns, what their interests are, and that's all data driven. But then also in terms of what you can do differently, a lot of the big guys often go for a much larger audience. What you can do actually as a small business to win is go for a tiny audience. And I always say, even when it comes to social media, you'd rather have a small loyal following. So you'd rather have, let's say if we talk Instagram, you'd rather have 5,000 really loyal people following you than 100,000 people that are not engaged. And so that's the difference, is as a smaller business on a small budget, just be more engaging in order to win. And maybe be more specific in terms of who you work with. Let's say if you are a chiropractor, instead of working with everyone, which you usually can, how about you specialize in high performance athletes? Or how about we have clients that have specialized, let's say, in runners. How about you are the chiropractor or nutritionist or whichever area we talk about, just for runners? And you can really carve out a niche in that space and dominate that if it's small enough and you can be engaging.
I've been using Telegram for quite a while. What I've seen is, you know, every now and then, you know, I've been added into different crypto, crypto room, yeah, I would say. Yeah, because yeah. I'm a curious guy. I write articles and so forth in crypto space. So every now and then I'm added to those different rooms because they want me to cover those topics as well, right? And now, you know, what I'm seeing is it's a different trend altogether, where we see the rooms is full of hundreds of thousands of people in the same space, you know, which means mm-hmm. like anything that you, you know, sort of, you know, send as a message, then it would be seen by hundreds of thousands of people altogether, which is, mm-hmm. which perhaps is very, very effective and very cheap as well. I don't know if you have really experienced that already, but, you know, that's just my experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, with these things like Telegram or even Clubhouse, where it's about the groups and it's about the community, I think the mistake that people make is they do see it as a platform to promote. So some people go, oh, wow, you know, this room has 100,000 people in it or even 1,000 people in it. What a great place to promote. And that's the worst that we can do. And I think where we probably are maybe missing the mark a little bit is using these rooms and groups and communities to provide value. I mean, this podcast is an example, right? Where you're spending an hour with us, we're spending an hour with you to add value here. And that's like a way to for people to realize, oh yeah, these guys know what they're doing. And I think you can apply this principle across every one of these social platforms. They're called social for a reason.
Yeah, indeed. Because most of the time, in these particular groups, like, you know, I also look into different other forums like Quora and Reddit and those forums. I see different interests there. Not necessarily everybody is a buyer, but still there are curious people like who are listening to the news or are providing some kind of comments there, you know, or they become a catalyst as far as sharing the content is concerned. So I see this being very, productive on its own, you know, based on what you are selling. Where do you find yourself, you know, suited the most as far as your offering is concerned?
You mean which platforms?
Which platforms?
Yeah. So for the data people, do you want to share the data people or do you want me to go?
The data people is, the thing is, it's not as probably social. I don't think it's not as online focused. It's probably more there's the kind of meetup aspects of it.
I think it's very social, but just not online that much.
Yeah, it's more actually face to face type. I know obviously COVID's had a big impact on that recently, but generally speaking, it's getting to meetups, it's getting to events, it's getting to functions where people are, you know, it's really interesting about the point where you're adding value. Actually, what we are is we're educators in this space. We educate people on the best way to do things. And that's what a lot of those kind of meetups and you know, group discussions are about. As far as, you know, social online is concerned, for the data people in particular, it'd be the likes of LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge one. It's a really, really, it's a very, very powerful tool from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the data people, where obviously the audience is more corporations, and as Tom mentioned, it's a lot of nurturing relationships. So a lot of the existing relationships and future relationships is a lot about nurturing them offline also. And then for basic bananas, with the audience of small business owners, we use mainly also LinkedIn and Instagram, Facebook. We don't use things like TikTok just yet because the demographic is a little bit too young for us. And a little bit of Clubhouse, but again, not too much. And then again, same as with the data people, a lot of events, a lot of relationship building. You know, the theme that we have this year across these companies is relationships. So the theme that everyone in our business needs to embrace or is invited to embrace is building relationships and really looking how we can enhance every touch point with people, customers, suppliers, prospects, past customers, etc.
As more companies embrace the advantages of hiring global talent, they are realizing that benefits are still very localized and constrained by national borders. That is, until our partner Safety Wing decided to do something about it. Safety Wing is on a mission to fix the problem of remote employee benefits by offering borderless benefits for remote and distributed teams. Safety Wing's remote health insurance works in any country, whether you live there or are just visiting. Add anyone affiliated with your company to one simple plan that gets cheaper as you scale, and customize your policy to make it perfect for your team. Safety Wing's remote health allows company to offer equal benefits to the whole team, no matter where they live or are located. Your team is global. Their benefits should be global too. Go to safetywing.com/remote health to learn more. That is safetywing.com/remote health.
Question to Tom. You've seen the evolution of data and data science, and now we are seeing more and more, companies using the data to maybe utilize, artificial intelligence or make some kind of relationship with the data. How do you see this particular segment or this artificial intelligence helping marketeers?
I mean, that's a great question. And I think, the term AI, bear in mind, has been around since the 50s. Mm-hmm. And it's only in the last probably 5 years that people have started to latch onto it again. And that's only because the technology is out there to support the concept of AI. I did a talk recently and I opened the talk with a video of a scene from the Minority Report, the film with Tom Cruise, where he's walking through a mall and, each shop recognizes him through a chip in his eye or facial recognition, and off the back of that understand his previous buying behavior and pitch him a particular shirt based on his buying behavior. So that's an example of where AI is making an impact. But before you get that, AI is there is a fair bit of hype around it, and there is still a lot of work to do in terms of the technology catching up. I think one of the really interesting things at the moment around data is actually how you govern the data that you've got and where that data comes from. So there's a huge shift at the moment away from, really advanced data science to actually, okay, let's make sure that the quality of the data that we've got is good. So there's kind of a bit of a shift to that, and it being, more around data governance, which in turn, if the quality of the data is there, the insights that are driven through some of these AI algorithms and machines are going to be better.
So what I've also found is in terms of usability, right? So sometimes I see companies, just showing their ideas, like create a problem that it was not there, in the first place, right? And then we are trying to solve that particular problem, which was not there. And then we are saying, okay, we are adding AI to it, right? In the first place, why do we even need that, right? So yeah, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, it's interesting. We talk to, our customers are varied. We talk with tier one banks, retailers, we work with charities. We work with a very broad audience of customers. And what's really interesting, when you sat down with a CEO, you mention AI, they get really excited. They have no idea what it is or what it does. but they know that they should be doing it, which is great, right? Because that means that people are investing heavily, both financially, you know, and from a workforce and technology perspective into AI. But again, yeah, I just it's easy to get wrapped up in the hype.
How do you see, you know, your clients or your peers, you know, interacting with the new technologies as such, you know, for example, you know, even with the digital space, even with the social media space, some people are still naive of the whole, you know, hype around social media. How have you found, you know, your clients as what kind of questions do they really ask at this point in time, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is around culture within an organization. So if I give you one example of some of the work we do is we do quite a bit of decommissioning work, which is, you know, old systems and decommissioning those systems. And there are people that have worked on those systems for many, 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 many years. And without those systems, they often don't have a job, right? So it's a real mindset change for a lot of people with a lot of this new technology. And it's almost like that's one of the hardest things, actually. It's not about the tech. It's not about being able to pick up the technology. It's about helping people change the way they think and helping them embrace this new technology. And that's obviously a huge culture piece. In terms of adopting the new tech, I think what organizations have done really well, some of the technology vendors, is make it as, you know, sort of user-friendly as they possibly can. But, you know, don't get me wrong, that when you talk about some of the analytics technology, the AI tech, you know, the advanced data tech out there, the people that tend to be using it are, you know, computer scientists, data scientists, data engineering type people. So they kind of have that ability to pick it up because they've got that technical background. But I think what's also, you know, another point to make here is that because, you know, the impact that this technology has is a business impact. It's not a tech impact. It affects the way that organizations are communicating with their customers, the way that a hospital treats a patient, you know, the way that a charity gets funds. And because it is so business focused, the people that run these organizations at that business level are really pushing it, which means it you know, it goes back to that culture piece, that the culture does embrace it because it's getting pushed from the right people. Does that make sense? Or have I just totally waffled on there?
Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned is about the legacy system that you mentioned. Yeah. You know, it's quite common, you know, in this space. You know, I personally am a consultant as well. You know, I go to organize and get a chance to talk to the leadership where they are dealing with the large legacy system, which has been built like 40 years ago. And now, you know, all these people are so used to using that particular system. Now, all of a sudden, I go in and I say, okay, you know, we need to change. We need to do this. We need to do that. You know, if I go in and I try to pitch in those ideas, then perhaps it's so difficult to sort of, you know, even sell the idea. So from your experience, where do you even start?
Yeah, it's a really great question. It's a fantastic question. And it's something actually that we've just been through with a client who had a legacy system they were spending millions on. And it was not really doing that much apart from one very specific job, but that one specific job was around fraud and risk within this organization. So, you know, really important, but it was costing them a ridiculous amount of money and they had this handful of people working on it. So the approach we took was, again, more of an education piece. You know, you've got these people that have worked on these systems for, as you say, 20, 30, 40 years sometimes. That's all they know. And there's a fear with them that if that system goes, that's it, they're out of a job. So for us, it was actually what we're going to do is through this decommissioning piece, we're actually going to educate you. We're going to take you through training. We're going to bring you on board with some of this new technology. And as and when we start to implement these new systems in these new platforms, you're the people that are going to be the champions of the platform. So not only are you going to pick up a new skill, but you're going to be in a role where you've actually got a bit of authority. You've got the ability to really make an impact and took that approach. Now, that sounds fantastic, right? And fortunately, most of the people in that group were really happy about that. There were still a few people that weren't so keen. But that would just be one example.
How often do you find yourself into a very difficult situation, very uncomfortable situation, where the conversation is not, you know, that you would like to have, right? So people have emotional connection with their job, mm-hmm. like that they've been doing for a while. Now, like you said, you know, they may be out of job. Now, you know, you're aware that those kind of challenges exist. Now you go into the organization and you still have to pitch in the new idea. Like, you know, how do you get by those kind of conversations?
Yeah, again, a really interesting question. And I think it's not, the thing you've got to realize is that it's not just, there's not just one person communicating this. It goes back to the whole culture piece and bringing, and this is not, this doesn't happen overnight, these things. You would know, being a consultant, that it takes a long time, A, to build a relationship with an organization, B, to then get in the right room with the right people, C, to start talking about, you know, the list goes on. And on and on. So you've been through the process for some time. But I think it's really, once you get to that stage, it's a collective approach between yourself and people within the client to sort of get these people through the process. And listen, it doesn't always work. That's the reality. And I think that there needs to be a point where you say, okay, this is not going to work with this particular individual or this particular individual. You know, what are then the next steps from then? Not everybody's gonna buy into it.
One of the things that I say to my client is, like, we need to have a target. You know, even though it takes time and it takes a lot of patience as far as when or how we will reach there, a goal. But we need to set a target, you know, maybe, you know, defining a target on its own is essential for the successful transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really important. And if you think about things like Agile and embracing that methodology, which I actually love, because I think, you know, it gives people a role and responsibility through each, through each sprint and I think that's really important. You can't just sort of go in there and coast and say, this is going to happen eventually. You know, there needs to be a deadline. It costs money to do it. So yeah, I completely agree.
Talking about the market, you know, in Australia versus, you know, let's say in England, how do you see the different market, you know, as far as happening or the evolution of technology or, you know, anything that you can see the difference?
One big thing, I had a meeting on Thursday. I was sat with a vendor. These guys actually are in the AI space. And the guy that runs it over here, he's from Chicago. And he's been over here a couple of years. And he said, the one thing that's really, really struck me about Australia versus the States, is that in Australia, everybody wants to go to the cloud. Every organization wants to go to the cloud. Where he says in the US, it's probably about 50% of organizations want to go to the cloud. Which kind of, I was quite surprised. I mean, obviously, you know, organizations in the US, a lot of them are larger and more complex and have these huge on-premise kind of environments. And that migration is just, you know, it's huge. But I was quite surprised by that, because a lot of the innovation we think comes from the US. I think generally speaking, Australia has been maybe 2-3 years behind the States and Europe when it comes to tech. Although in saying that, if you look at some of the recent IPOs in Australia, a lot of those IPOs are tech companies. And then also you talk about organizations like, you know, we've all heard of Atlassian. They're a huge tech success and they come out of Sydney.
And Canva
as well is another one. You'd be following them in the press recently. That's another Australian based unicorn. Does that answer your question?
I think a lot of times, like, you know, especially being in the Central European region, like, you want to sort of, you know, see like how the market is in Australia and how it is evolving over time. And indeed, like, you know, being a regular user of Jira and Confluence, I'm quite aware of those tools. And sometimes I also use Canva. But other than that, like, as far as the market, you know, let's say acceptability or market willingness to change or within the company space, you know, how do you see the difference there, you know, as far as the culture, perhaps? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. because I've worked in both. I mean, the UK was, I'd say maybe a little bit more aggressive when I was there around innovation, mm-hmm. And trying to do things differently. But this is like 17 years ago. I've got my brother, he has a business in the UK, which is in escrow and security testing. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be doing some really, really interesting stuff, some real innovative stuff around escrow and testing. But yeah, I don't know. What have you got an opinion on that, Cisco?
I think generally what I have found, I can only compare it to really Switzerland and the US, because we've also started Basic Finance in the US. I feel like exactly what he said in terms of what's available on the market in terms of tech solutions, the US is definitely ahead of Australia, and also Switzerland is probably ahead of Australia, but behind the US, a little bit in terms of the willingness to try new things. And also a lot of the reason for that is that there's just less funding here. Mm. If you go to the US, there's a lot more investment available to build something than here in Australia. So a lot of these companies, they do look outside of the US to get funding, to get something off the ground. But then I find that in terms of the willingness to adapt, to change, to do things differently, Aussies are very, in my eyes, are very open-minded, probably more than Swiss people.
Yeah, it's funny, because there's some pretty odd laws in Australia, you know, being a citizen. There is actually quite a lot of innovation going on in terms of mindsets within organisations, and they are trying to do things differently.
I find them quite courageous here in terms of
doing things differently. I'll tell you what, there is a bit of a trend at the moment within some of the larger end users. So, you know, the banks, the insurers, the retailers, where they are creating organizations within their own organization, which is essentially, you know, an innovation hub. So that's a trend that's been happening for the last sort of 3-4 years, where they've, you know, they're essentially a separate entity within the organization that is basically there to innovate around technology. That's their only job, which I guess is a good sign.
Yeah, I also felt like the fund in the States is much more available to the startups, mm-hmm. than compared to the, even if you compare it to the European region, I guess it's way more available. And I think here the scrutiny is way more as far as how you get the fund or the process of getting the fund, perhaps it's much longer, you know, at least from my experience, that's what I found. And perhaps in the States, you know, the fund is there, you know, so maybe that helps the startups who just take that risk and take that plunge and just go for it. All right. You know, so how do you see yourself doing the same thing that you're doing now in the next 5 years? And maybe you can talk about the future from your own perspective, both of you. Maybe I want to start with Franziska on this one.
I think with Basic Bananas, what we have done and how I see the future is we used to run our programs face-to-face. So we used to run these workshops, educational marketing workshops. Our flagship program is called The Clever Bunch. It goes for 12 months. And we would meet up with, or our mentors would meet up with businesses every single month in person, in small groups. And last year we had to change the whole system and do everything virtually. And it was definitely quite a challenging time, because people were still a bit like, what? Like, how can we do this virtually now that, you know, we have to? And now people are more used to doing it and more to this virtual world of learning and connecting. So how I see the future for the next 5 years is that we just have more access to a bigger audience, because before we were limited to geography. So we had the operation set up here in every city of Australia, US West Coast, LA, and San Francisco, Seattle, San Diego, and Austin and Dallas and Switzerland and New Zealand. And now none of these are run virtually in person anymore. So now we have, the future for us is just about now finding the right people anywhere in the world, not just in a specific space where we are. And also in terms of talent, if I think about what's the future in terms of talent of people that we can hire, not only for basic knowledge, but for the data people, for anything we build, we have access to the entire world, basically, because we're used to now working in this manner where people can work from home. And I think that that for me is probably one of the most exciting things that we're looking at in the next 5 years.
And for Tom?
I think for me, it's technology getting closer to the business is a big one. You know, it was having been in tech for 20 years, I remember when I first started in tech and tech was this, you know, basement full of people who were, you know, coding away and building stuff, and the business was a very separate entity, and there wasn't as much collaboration, I think, between the two. And I've just seen it get closer and closer and closer over the last 15 years or so. And I think the next 5 years, it's going to continue to get even closer. And I think with that, there's going to be a better, I think people in the business are going to be better equipped to understand the true value of technology. And I think that will be, you know, that's where we want to be, right? So I think that will continue to improve. I'd sort of second Siska's comment on the talent thing as well. Yeah, just global access to great talent. I mean, finding good talent is just hard. So I think that's really going to improve things. Although in saying that, I still think there needs to be some work with organizations around the fact that people can still do the job as well, if not better, as someone who's based on the ground.
And Francisca, you mentioned that, you know, most of the things that you used to do face-to-face has now been transformed into online. And how difficult was that switch? You know, how difficult was that switch to just to do it overnight, or maybe, you know, educating your people like who are working with you? How did you do that?
Yeah, it was it almost had to happen overnight. The preference would have been, and this is what, you know, a lot of businesses say, what this pandemic has done is accelerated our progress. So we've always thought we are going to do this evolution in the longer run, but then because everything went into lockdown also here in Australia, we pretty much had to adapt from Monday to the next. So the transition happened very quickly from meeting in person to now, hey, our community, we have maybe 400, 500 people in the community. Hey, everyone, your next meeting is not in the venue anymore. It's now virtually. So that happened really quickly. However, the people then catching up to this new mindset probably took, depending on the person, but I would say took maybe 10 months to now go, oh, you know what? That's pretty the normal thing to do now.
Yeah, people have realized, like, you know, you don't need to be in the office to do most of the things physically, at least from my perspective as well, it works. But still, you know, it is the new changing world, and we are blessed that we are connected to the internet, you know.
Yes, we really are.
All right. Thank you guys for joining this session. It was wonderful conversation. I'm sure there are so many things that you would be doing in the future, and it would be great to learn more about you guys in the future as well. Perhaps next year when everything would open up, you know, when there would be no topic of COVID anymore, it would be a great time to again have a chat and see what you guys are doing at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully we can travel to Europe again so we can come to Belgium.
Absolutely. And have some waffles and chocolates, you know, and beers.
You know. Now we go talking.
Belgian chocolates. That's a big competitor to Swiss chocolate, but I'll have it.